Hey everyone!
Hola a todos!
This is Shahira.
And this is Stephanie, and welcome back to another episode of Cuento Crimen Podcast.
Feliz miércoles! We hope you are all having a wonderful Wednesday. Y si están como yo, de seguro están, you know, suffering from allergies because it is springtime. Mm-hmm. I love spring, but I always forget what it does to me now. Just kidding. But yeah, but we hope you're all having a great day. Steph, do we have any updates?
We do have updates this time around. Updates. First one is that we are back on TikTok. I don't know if we mentioned that before. We are back on there and we're being a little bit more consistent. And we ask you all to go check it out. Go share, go like.
Keep us motivated.
Yeah, keep us motivated because making TikToks is another thing on our to-do list. And, you know, we are only audio, so TikTok, you do get to see us.
And it's really different because you have to, like, pay attention to lo que estás diciendo, pero a la misma vez poner atención of your posture. Yeah. Like, I don't know, it's just a lot more.
It's a lot more. It's like the video aspect of it. So a little bit more work, but we are on there. So go show us some support. Go comment. Cheer us on.
Yes. Please, we need it.
Mm-hmm. And we do have a second announcement.
Ew.
Do you want to tell them?
Oh my god, me?
Yes.
Well, this is like a project that we've been working on for a few months now. And it's something that Steph and I have always wanted to do. Pero siempre nos ha dado like un poco de miedo, de nervios to tip our toes into this world. But we finally made the decision and we think that it's time to bring out some Cuento Crimen merch.
Mm-hmm.
Si se acuerdan, si han estado aquí desde años, se acuerdan que once upon a time sacamos unos stickers. Y los stickers eran nuestros dichos de uno nunca sabe, cada cabeza es un mundo y caras vemos corazones no sabemos. Which here in the podcast, we live by those dichos because we see it over and over. Entonces sí teníamos unos stickers por allí, and some of y'all were so kind enough to support us and purchase some, so we appreciate that. And we're bringing them back. We're bringing them back, and it's gonna be like a little, like what, like a little 2.0?
Yeah, a little redesign, rebrand. But yeah, I scared like I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, we told y'all that we were working on some stuff and we just kind of left y'all hanging like that. And so we were talking about how like, okay, maybe we should let them know and like include them in the process because this is new to us. Uh-huh. So honestly, it's a very slow process. Nothing is really set in motion. We are right now working on designs and, you know, we've talked to some designers and very early stages on, but we do want to include y'all like in the process because we told y'all that we have something coming but it might not be for a while, you know.
But also también like para incluirlos a ustedes because, you know, obviously like these stickers and merch and everything that we plan on bringing out, like it's essentially for you all. So it's like, ¿qué les va a gustar a ustedes? ¿Qué les gustaría ver? You know, color, no color, this font, that font, you know, it's a lot of decisions to make.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we lagged taking this step because it's a lot.
It's a big project. You know, like we like to think like, oh, would we wear that? Would we like this?
Yeah.
You know, just to put a little bit more effort into what we, you know, want to put out. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, on Instagram, we did put a poll and we asked like, oh, what would y'all like? Right. And we got some suggestions.
We did.
Know?
I think someone said like a bucket hat.
Yeah.
And I was
so
like,
cute.
Oh, yeah.
Summer's coming. Summer's coming. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something to, you know, consider. Like we'd like to ask. And like, that's now in our head. Like maybe we could do bucket hats. Who knows?
Yeah. So if you would like to put some kind of input, if you care at all, if you're listening to this, some of y'all may just skip it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, follow us on Instagram. We're at Cuento Crimen Podcast. So ahí pueden estar más up to date. Or como dijo Stephanie, sometimes like we post stories with polls or like maybe just previews that we need y'all to vote on. We would appreciate a vote on.
Yes.
Todo eso lo pueden encontrar en el Instagram.
Yeah, y'all can vote, message us, sin compromiso. Mm-hmm. We just want to hear your feedback. And, you know, let us know what y'all think about these designs, fonts, and stuff like that. We just wanted to include you all in this process because this is new to us, right? So we don't know how long it'll take for us to put this out, to be honest.
Yeah. We're also very indecisive, so.
Yeah, with the designs. Like, you know, we have to really sit on them, you know? And we have on some of the designs that we have right now.
Yeah.
But we maybe need to sit on it for a little longer just to make sure that these are the ones.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll keep you all updated. We'll try our best. But yeah, like I said, those updates will probably be on the intros on the episodes or on Instagram. So,
yeah.
Ahí va a estar.
So, yeah, those are our two main updates for this week. And, yeah, so I know y'all are here for true crime. So, I'm sure, come on, like, hurry up. So let's get started. Today we will be covering Karina Vetrano's case, and this case really shook us, and like, we cover a crime every week, right? Mm-hmm. So this case really left that impression on us.
Karina was a 30-year-old woman who was taking a jog when she was brutally murdered.
And, you know, one of the reasons why it left us so shook is because it highlights everyday danger that a woman can go through. Like, it's just a simple jog, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's, like, kind of the crazy part that, you know, you're just doing your everyday thing and then something like this can happen. We get that it can happen to anyone, right? But the rate that it's happening to women, it's so much higher.
I mean, just think about, like, how many cases de femicidio we have covered here on Cuento Crimen. Mm-hmm. And like, Steph and I try to keep that in mind, and we try to like include as much, is diversity even the right word? Like we do keep tabs on the demographics that mm-hmm. we have had here on the podcast, but still like a lot of them are femicides, and it's really sad and it's scary because, you know, like, como hemos dicho, like, Steph and I somos mujeres de color. So these are the challenges and these are the fears that we face every day. But anyways, let's begin on the case. Before we begin, we would like to give you all a heads up because we will be talking about sensitive topics. Antes de empezar, queremos darles una advertencia porque vamos a hablar de temas sensibles.
Y también queremos decir que hablamos de estos casos con todo respeto a las familias y a las víctimas. Okay, let's begin.
So Karina was born on July 12th, 1986, which made her 30 years old during the time of her murder. Ella vivía en Nueva York con su familia.
Her parents were Philip and Kathy Vetrano, y Karina tenía un hermano y una hermana. And a quick fact about her dad was that he was actually a New York City Fire Department retiree, and he was even there for the Twin Towers accident on 9/11.
I feel like it just speaks volume mm-hmm. de lo del tipo de persona que era. Y pues sí, Karina venía de una familia muy unida y muy buena gente. Like, they all had good intentions, good hearts. And it was just really nice to read about, like, their family dynamic.
Yeah, I got the same vibes when we were researching this case. Like, you know, just the good intention vibes and just mm-hmm. good people. And a little more on Karina. She had graduated from St. John's University with a master's in speech pathology.
Y al tiempo del caso, que, by the way, era en el año 2016, Karina estaba trabajando con niños con autismo as a speech pathologist, which I think is awesome. For those that don't know, both Steph and I have experience working in special education. So reading about her being part of it kind of like warmed my heart. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of like the speech pathologist at my school and, you know, the work that we put into these yeah. children.
I think I've said this before. I think this working in that field was really rewarding, and it's really hard. So like, that's why when we say that it warms our heart, like, I think it's because we know how hard that job is.
And yeah.
Like, it takes a lot on you.
It's emotionally hard, yeah.
physically even, and mentally. Like, mm-hmm. it's just all of it. So that's why we say, like, I think that's a lot. And like, she, you know, she got her master's in this and then she's working with kids. So like, you can see that there's a passion, you know?
Yeah.
That for us, it tells us a lot about her. That's why we mention it.
Mm-hmm.
Y aparte de esto, Karina también was an aspiring writer, and she even appeared in a 2013 short film que fue inspirada por los writing pieces de ella.
That must be a really cool, badass feeling to have your writing be transformed into a short film. Mm-hmm. Like, heck yeah. I've always wanted to do that, low-key. So, you know, all in all, Karina tenía un corazón enorme, lleno de amor, lleno de alegría, lleno de life, you know? Y ella tenía muchas metas por cumplir.
Which is why it's very heartbreaking what happened on August 2nd, 2013. Esa tarde, Karina fue a correr en Spring Creek Park. And this was a usual thing, by the way. She was always going on a run. Like, she, mm-hmm. that was part of her day. She liked to do a daily jog.
Yeah, she was like a fit person by what it seemed like. Y lo único diferente en este día particular era que Karina fue sola. Casi siempre iba con una amiga, pero en este día su amiga no pudo ir. I don't remember the reason, just, you know, that she canceled for the day. And Karina's dad now says how he even recalls telling Karina that maybe it was best if she just skipped the day para que no fuera sola.
You know, I think he maybe had like a gut feeling, right? Something was telling him. Mm-hmm. Pero Karina, you know, would go on jogs all the time. So she thought it was okay. It was no biggie. And she was going to go on her run. Que, you know, al cabo, el parque estaba muy cerca de su casa. She was familiar with her run.
Yeah, and I think, como está diciendo Steph, el parque estaba muy cerca. Será, like, I think less than a block away, actually, or like, I don't know, something like extremely close. And it's crazy to think how sometimes we're so close to home, pero nunca sabes lo que puede pasar.
Yeah, it's like super scary because she's like so familiar with this, you know?
Yeah.
She doesn't need maps or anything like
that. And then also, like, you just really think, like, what can go wrong? Like, what can happen? But like, aquí en el mundo de true crime, a lot of things can happen.
It's crazy because like she's running through, you know, to get there through the same houses, you know, day after day. So it's like,
yeah,
you don't expect anything to go wrong with what, you know, you already know type of thing. Yeah. Pero entonces, Karina was last seen around 5 p.m. entering the Spring Creek Park as she was going to start her jog.
But after a few hours, Karina failed to come back home. Y cuando sus papás le estaban llamando, ella nunca regresó ninguna de las llamadas y tampoco los mensajes de texto. Y allí fue cuando la preocupación empezó.
Luckily, Karina's dad had a neighbor who was the New York PD police chief, and he immediately reached out to him to ask him for help. Y muy pronto empezaron las búsquedas.
I am really glad to hear que they wasted no time and got straight to it. Y como a las 11 de la noche, el cuerpo de Karina fue encontrado. Her body was face down about 15 feet off of the main trail where she was running.
Trigger warning, because of what, you know, I'm going to mention and how she was found. So just letting y'all know, y'all can skip the next couple of minutes or so. But yeah, here we go. Karina fue encontrada con su sports bra pulled down and her breasts were out.
Her underwear and shorts were rolled down around her left thigh and partially taken off of her right thigh.
Su right thigh estaba llena de rasguños y moretones. And we say this, you know, a lot, like, se me hace un nudo en la garganta de leer estos detalles and de pensar de, you know, everything that she went through.
And she went through a lot because, you know, ya cuando revisaron su cuerpo y todo, like, Karina put up a fight. She even had one of her tooth cracked from how hard she was biting her attacker. Can you imagine, like, biting someone so hard that you crack your tooth? And along with that, her hands were also found clutching grass. Piensan que esto era de como she was like dragged off the trail, so she was trying so hard to hold on to something, but she was actually just ripping the grass with her.
It's like kind of crazy how like we can tell what may have happened by looking at all these details and like, you know, the scratches, los moretones que tenía, and you know, you can see what she might have lived through.
Yeah.
Right? So that's like, I don't know, so scary and like sad to, you know, imagine what, you know, Karina went through. La autopsia confirmó que Karina murió de estrangulación y también parecía que también tenía trauma en la cabeza y entonces su muerte fue declarada un homicidio.
La muerte de Karina fue algo muy brutal y también muy violenta, like, you know, just based off reports and how they described that her body was found. Like, I think there was a report that said that she had been strangled so tightly que tenía una impresión de mano pintada, like a handprint around her neck. That's how tight it was. And this is hours after, too, so.
And along with that, también encontraron ADN debajo de sus uñas y también en su celular.
And yes, of course, this is like, oh my God, yes, you know, they found DNA and this is like the person responsible for Karina's murder. But when investigators ran it through their system, it was no match. And so I think that has to be one of the most frustrating things. Like, aquí tienes algo so big that can literally solve this whole thing. Pero si no tienes un match, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, I agree. You have all that you need to find this person. You know, get the answers that you need. But, you know, the DNA, like this was, it just led to no leads because it wasn't in the system.
Like so close yet so far. Y durante la investigación, tomaron como 600 muestras de ADN to see if they could find a match. But no positive match was coming through.
Police officials had a $10,000 reward for information or any knowledge on Karina's killer. And they also, you know, they did get a lot of leads. I think they had like around 250 leads, but unfortunately, it didn't lead to like answers.
For a while, people believed that Karina's murder was connected to another murder that happened only a week after hers.
El 7 de agosto, Vanessa Marcotte fue encontrada muerta in Princeton, Massachusetts, while she was also on a run, just like Karina.
Mm-hmm. And there were multiple similarities between the two cases, y es por eso que la gente empezó a pensar que they were connected, or, you know, that the same person had committed both crimes.
Y por esta razón, these two cases got national attention. But pretty soon, this theory was ruled out because the DNA found in each case was not the same to one another. And, you know, because of that, they ended that theory.
Mm-hmm. Y pues ya después que they dismissed that theory, así quedó el caso de Karina por un tiempo, hasta diciembre de 2017. The FBI and New York Police Department desarrolló y compartió un perfil sospechoso de quien pudo haber matado a Karina. Y a los pocos meses, el 4 de febrero de 2017, la policía anunció que they had taken in a suspect for questioning.
Chanel Lewis, of 20 years old, was taken into questioning. He was a black young Brooklyn resident who had been arrested for a count of second-degree murder.
So, first of all, I think we also read somewhere that one of the main detectives of the case had seen Chanel around his neighborhood like multiple times. And that's kind of like what brought him under their radar, or like questioning quién era este hombre.
Yeah, and that was a bit confusing to understand, but it seems like one thing led to another. And Chanel was asked for his fingerprints. And then when his DNA came back, it came back a match to the one found in Karina's fingernails and cell phone. Entonces, por eso es que, you know, they shifted their attention to him.
Well, I mean, what are the chances, though, that your DNA is the same one that was found in a murder scene? Like, what are the odds?
Y también eso puede explicar, you know, por qué le andaba en el área, you know, where the detective was. And, like, it seems like he almost wanted to kind of be in the loop on this case.
Yeah. And so a little background on him. Chanel, como dijimos, tenía 20 años and he was currently unemployed. Y vivía con su mamá y sus tres hermanas y los hijos de sus hermanas.
So it seems like a very busy home. Y ellos vivían in a low-income housing project in East New York. And that's how it was described. Y la casa de él estaba nomás 3 millas del parque en donde Karina fue asesinada.
Very close by también. And so, when they initially run a background check on him, it turns out that he had a clean record. Apparently, like, si tenían escritos, o sea, he had, like, a hatred towards women. En el pasado, había dicho comentarios that weren't okay.
And he had been taken into protective custody numerous times in the past. And también leímos que he dealt with a lot of, like, mental health issues as well.
And I feel like although he did have, a clean record, like, you know, no big crimes on there, I feel like there was a lot there to unpack, específicamente cosas que se tratan que ver con el asesinato de Karina.
Yeah, I agree. And so, you know, when police started asking him about the murder of Karina, he did confess his statement and even included a description of a very specific puddle of muddy water that was in the area. So he, like, knew these details.
Sí, yeah. And I feel like detalles así chiquitos are what says the most, you know, like they say a lot. Like, how did he know, or how do you even think about describing a little muddy puddle that's nearby? So, I don't know, to me, that's always something to look out for. And so at the end of the day, he did confess that he was the one who murdered Karina. But after he made the confession, he then took it back. No leímos por qué hizo esto. Like, we don't know what was his reasoning behind that. Pero después de esto, Chanel claimed that he didn't kill Karina.
Él dijo que el 2 de agosto, él se fue a la casa después de haber discutido con su familia y que decidió ir a caminar al parque.
Ahí es donde él vio a Karina y la atacó. It was just a random encounter, como dijimos, like a crime of opportunity, right? Y cuando Chanel regresó a su casa, su mamá dice que she remembers he came home with his clothes all torn off. He had bruises everywhere. Y que cuando le preguntaron qué le había pasado, él nomás dijo that he had been mugged by a group of men.
Al siguiente día, su papá llevó a Chanel to the ER to get some treatment for his scratches and cuts all throughout his upper body.
Loki, if you think about it, si te tienen que llevar al ER for some scratches and some bruising, entonces así estaban de feas esas cortadas, esas heridas. And so that was his original confession, we are assuming. But like we said, he ends up taking it back and he ends up saying that all of that was not true. And along with him, también la familia de él denies him being involved in the homicide.
La familia de Chanel ni sabía sobre el caso de Karina until Chanel was named a person of interest.
And I mean, I feel like it's hard to be, like, in this situation, to be Chanel's family y escuchar de las cosas horribles que le pasó a esta muchacha and just thinking that that could be your son, your brother. Like, it's a lot of emotions there to unpack, you know? I don't know. I don't know. Like, I just, it must be tough.
Yeah, it's a tough situation for the family to mm-hmm. accept that, you know?
Yeah. And so the trial first began on November 5th, 2018. And it was very intense and a very long process.
Chanel pled not guilty to murder and sexual abuse, and he was facing a sentence of 25 years to life in prison.
Y el 7 de noviembre, el papá de Karina, Phil, testificó en la corte. And again, our heart goes out to her family because, you know, only he knows what he felt. Because I feel like it's a lot of emotions, escuchar todo lo que le pasó a tu hija, and then here you have this person who they think is responsible for it in front of you. Like, it's a lot of emotion.
Yeah, our hearts definitely go out to Karina's family. And the trial did go on for a while. After Karina's dad testified, the jurors watched a videotape of Chanel's original confession to the murder.
They also presented a lot of forensic evidence in the trial, you know, like the whole thing with the DNA matched on the phone, on her fingernails. It seemed like there was a pile of evidence against Chanel, to be honest.
And on November 21st, 2018, the judge declared a mistrial and rescheduled a retrial that didn't even end up happening until March 2019.
That's a lot of time if you really think about it. Mm-hmm. Y el 23 de abril de 2019, Chanel fue condenado a cadena perpetua sin posibilidad de libertad condicional. That's life in prison with no chance of parole.
Yeah, it's a big crime and you know, it's a big sentence, yeah. But, you know, he did take someone's life away. So at the end of the day, you know, you have to pay the crime, you know? And, you know, people had a lot of mixed feelings about this conclusion on the sentence, but muchas personas sí estaban de acuerdo with this punishment, pero, you know, también había otras personas que creían que Chanel was wrongfully convicted.
I feel like this case and, like, the trial was very emotionally charged. Like, tienes this horrible crime, the person who they believe is responsible, y las dos familias, and, you know, una familia is, like, grieving the loss of their daughter, you know, and, like, just everything that their daughter went through, and then the other one is at the same time kind of losing their son, you know, and like they're claiming that it wasn't their son and they believe that Chanel was not the one responsible. So there's a lot of emotions.
Al final del día, Chanel always said that he was innocent, and he said, and we quote, "I'm innocent. I'm sorry for the family's loss, but I didn't do this," end quote.
And just also like a disclaimer while we were reading about like, or like, why was it such a hard decision, right? The sí o no si era él. But we didn't really find the reasons why people thought it was hard. Like, a lot of them just mostly, it was the discussion of men of color getting charged with a woman's murder. You know, like, mm-hmm. that's kind of, like, where they saw it. And that's why a lot of people thought that this was mishandled. But at the end of the day, like we said, like, Chanel was declared guilty and, you know, he is facing, you know, his sentence now. And we kind of wanted to end with a quote from Karina's dad that just completely broke our hearts. I think it was very powerful. So he said that he, his wife, and children, quote unquote, walk the earth as zombies, just waiting to die so we can be with Karina again, end quote.
That's such a sad quote.
It is.
And like, it might be just a little bit of a glimpse to try to understand what these families go through.
Yeah.
Because we say a lot, oh, I can only imagine this and that, right? Mm-hmm. But we really can't. Like, that to me is such a powerful quote.
Yeah. Y también, pues, I think we talked about this not too long ago, but again, like, estos casos son vida real, and these are real families that are left behind to grieve, you know, their family member. And it's really sad, and it's just, it's heartbreaking, yeah. You know, como nosotros as humanos can hurt others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I think in this quote, it's very powerful. He's, you know, saying how the day his daughter left, so did his, su bienestar, su felicidad, su everything.
Yeah, it's almost like walking on earth as zombies is kind of like walking numbness.
Numbness,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is why we always, like, you know, tell y'all it's important to remember that these are real stories, as you were saying.
Yeah.
You know, I do hope that investigators handled this case correctly. Like, they did match DNA, you know, from the scene to this person. So I hope that it wasn't mishandled in any way. But I am, you know, glad that the family is having closure. And I really hope it is closure because they got the real person that did this crime.
I mean, at the end of the day, though, su hija nunca va a regresar, que es lo más triste. And yeah, I think this case just stuck out porque ya teníamos rato que no hemos escuchado of a crime of opportunity happening just because. But yeah, but this was Karina's case. As always, vamos a poner fotos de ella up on our Instagram. If you would like to go take a look, if you have any questions, any comments, feel free to let us know over at the post on our Instagram, @ Con Tu Crimen Podcast. And we will see you all next week.